There we go. I just figured I'll take audio and take some pictures. And
yeah, what's your trip all about?
My trip, my wife's family does like a family reunion thing every summer. They're like one of those tighter knit families where it's like everybody kind of stays connected and love each other. Versus I'm like from a family that like someone threw a hand grenade in there early on and everything fucking blew up, yeah, you know. And it's like it's cool and everything, but a lot of her family's from Colorado. So we end up coming here a lot.
Oh, okay. So where's the family reunion then?
This time it's in Fraser out of, by yeah. Winter Park.
Yeah.
So we started our trip doing downhill at North Star. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to go to Trestle while we're at Fraser.
And where are you living?
Oh, living right now? I live in Fairfax, California.
Yeah.
And we bought a house in Salida. Mm. And if and when I retire from my job, we're probably moving to Salida and I'm going to set up a shop there.
Cool.
And just do PVD shit for real, mm-hmm, a little bit, like, but things are changing right now. I mean, we're in a very exciting time. If you've seen some of the stuff I've been doing, mm-hmm, with 3D printing, yeah, and stuff, yeah, and also just offshore manufacturing, mm-hmm, for small fries. You know, so like one of the vendors that I'm currently using, they have machining and anodizing services too. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, if I need a bunch of brake adapters made, well,
it's no problem.
It should be no problem. I'm going to test that out this week. I'm going to get a quote, see how the quote jives, because there's a big difference between printing and machining in terms of what they have to do on their end. Like for printing, they have a machine and they have someone there doing the care and feeding, mm-hmm, but they just do throughput, right? Machining, well, you have to have people program it. Mm-hmm. You have to order the stock. You have to put it in the machine, take it out. You have to flip it over. You have to have the right tool. You know, there's a lot more to machining than printing. And so we'll see how their pricing aligns with that. But it's really kind of exciting. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, maybe record and have snippets online, just about the changes we're going to start seeing. Like, you've been around bicycle building. You, both of us have, but you've obviously been doing it full pro for a long time. The changes that this type of stuff, the printing, the offshore machining, or, you know, just bringing it down to the point where a garage guy can get 3 brake adapters done and have it be feasible.
Right.
And stuff like that. And we're already starting to see a lot of interesting stuff come up that's been 3D printed, people sticking stuff together that are nobody's. Nobody knows who they are. They just appeared and there's a 3D printed bike or whatever.
Yep.
And it's really cool. I mean, some of the stuff is very bad. Some of the stuff is plausible. One or two things is like, oh, that's scary how good they are, mm-hmm, type of thing. And it's like, it's just be kind of interesting to hear your take on that.
It's an unknown for me because I haven't dove into that world.
But Moots has, and you probably talked with them a little bit.
Yeah, a bit, for sure. And I think that, you know, I'm not going to speak for them directly, but, you know, cost is still an issue when you're talking about titanium printed parts.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. And then also there, you know, you mentioned throughput. You can only print so many things at a time,
right,
on a machine.
Right.
So you have to start stacking up a lot of really expensive machines,
right,
to get quantity.
Oh, like is Moots printing on their site? They're not.
No, they're not printing on site.
Right.
No, they're farming it all out.
Right.
Which they've gone through. I think they're on their third or fourth printer now.
Okay.
Because at least a couple of them have gone out of business.
Really?
Through the process.
Weird.
Yeah.
That's odd because the way I figured it's like, you know, what everybody who's making 3D printers right now is selling them before they're even started.
Sure.
And they're just moving because everyone's just filling spaces with 3D printers, right, you know?
Right.
And, you know, when I see the machine count at like this Chinese vendor that I'm using, it's like, really? You have like 500 machines in your facility? Like, that's the real deal.
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny because the bike industry still has a expectation of aerospace.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, both clients and builders and hobby builders.
Well, people like to say aerospace grade aluminum.
Sure.
Which means, what, does it have a number in front of it?
Aerospace grade anything.
Yeah, like it's been designated with a mixture of metals.
Yeah. But so you get these designers, you know, and I'm guilty of it as well, who just try to pare everything down and make the part as complex as possible.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, it's now it's a difficult part to print. It's a difficult part to machine. It doesn't matter. Regardless, you're still like pushing the envelope of the manufacturing process.
But isn't that
for a bicycle?
Sure. Yes. I mean, that's the old statement. It's not going to the moon, right? Or something like that. But I mean, is it? I mean, you're Brad Bingham. I mean, you have a reputation that is well earned. You know, you earned your reputation. You're obviously one of the better. best welders in the industry, and you've won all kinds of awards, which is awesome. But, you know, I mean, I'm a designer of parts and things like that, and you do that too. It's like, it's not like just you're a welding guy.
Sure.
But like you actually design parts, and not a lot of bike builders or frame builders actually do part design. And it's like a whole nother level. Or then, did you make your own tooling? Like I look at this plate here, it looks pretty crazy. It's like, that must be yours.
It's a great tool, yeah.
Yeah, designed, take a picture of it.
designed it a few years ago, yeah. I don't put too many pictures of that on Instagram.
Do you mind when I do?
I mean,
I'm not gonna put it on Instagram
for myself. I don't mind one bit.
Okay.
No. I mean,
anything off limits, by the way?
No.
Cool.
Definitely not.
I don't wanna ruin anything for anybody. I just wanna get all the information I can.
Yeah. No, but I think that, like, just my whole, just who I am as a builder, like, I care so much about how something moves through the process.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be good all the way through.
Right.
Like, it can't just accomplish one thing at the beginning step of the construction process.
Like, it's easy to make versus easy to make, looks good, works great in the field.
Yeah,
it needs to
move all the way through.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. That's what's important to me, and so I try to incorporate that.
How you doing?
Good.
This is Ed.
Ed,
this
I'm Peter. Pete. How you doing?
Pete. Good to meet
nice
you.
Nice to meet you. Yeah.
So, I figured I better save something for tomorrow.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I'm out of here.
Sounds good.
Okay. Have a good night.
Right. See you.
Nice chatting with you, man.
Thanks for everything.
Yeah, like that's one thing I wanted to talk to you about, because we both design and everything like that. And it's like, I'm the same way. It's like, I'm going to push, if I know you've got a three-axis mill, I'm going to push that three-axis mill as hard as it can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I know you've got a five-axis mill, I'm going to push that five-axis as hard as you can. I'm going to use ball nose as much as I can afford, you know, or whatever. And it's like, when can I get away with surfacing on a part that... Does it matter if it's surfaced, you know, and things like that? And it's like, we're always playing that line of economics versus what we dream of.
Well, then back to that idea of like this idea of aerospace. It's the bike industry is such a mixture of industrial designers.
Yeah.
You know, engineers.
Graphic designers, mostly.
I mean, and you're trying to pull everything together.
Yeah.
And and when you pull it off well, it really works out.
Yeah.
But when you focus too heavily on one aspect, I think that's when you, like what you said, when you look at a bike with maybe it's just loaded with 3D printed parts.
Sure.
And all the 3D printed parts are cool, but how they're put together
is
questionable.
The whole is less than the sum of the parts.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, and we can always do that. You know, I've... In the past, let's say, 6 or 8 months, I've had to completely change how I design parts because of 3D printing.
I believe it, yeah.
It's entirely different than subtractive versus additive. It's so much different.
Mm-hmm.
I'm suddenly having to use surfaces all the time. I'm using curves mm-hmm. all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at like sub-D surfacing right now and how to integrate that into my thing, because it's like, oh, that's exactly what I need, but SolidWorks doesn't have that, and blah, blah, blah. But it's like...
And it's super neat.
Oh, sure.
And it is the next step, for sure. I think, you know, regardless of what you think about the current state of it, the future's additive.
Sure.
I mean, just period.
I guess when I asked you the question, it wasn't so much about 3D printing in particular. It's about the rise of, in a way, the voiceless masses are suddenly going to be able to, like we saw it with Merino, when Merino started getting hot, and it was like, oh, some kid in Bristol, you know, England can order up a bike with the geometry that Pink Bike says is cool. And suddenly he gets it and finds out right away that it's terrible. But the thing is that, you know, we had that kind of push where it's like suddenly just anybody could kind of just get a bike with custom geometry, even though they couldn't buy, you know, a $20,000 Bingham bike.
I've never built a $20,000.
Really?
For sure.
I figured you'd got there. But certainly, like, your frames are going to be probably, what are your frames, like $6,000 or something like that?
A frame set, yeah. I mean, sure. I'm definitely not setting any new records for pricing, but, you know.
Right. They're pricey, and the thing is, like, that the fact that...
Yeah, I'm with you.
That any Joe could just suddenly buy a bike that was just whatever they dreamt up. And now we're going to have a thing where it's like, pretty soon it's going to be like, oh, what geometry you want? Here's some lugs. Here's some sticks. Stick them together at home. And now you've got a bike. And it's actually a good rideable bike. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the details have been built into the system and stuff like that.
Right.
And you as an old hat, and me as an old hat at all this stuff, knowing what we know or what we think we know.
Right.
And suddenly it's going to be challenged by a lot of just people who just materialize and are giving us a run for our money. Mm. And there's excitement there, there's fear there, and then there's just like, when's my expiration date?
Yeah, I guess it comes down to what is that number of faceless Joes out there who are truly going to take that on? Even though it is, you say, like, so easy, at some point, it still requires a great deal of knowledge and tools.
Yes.
You know, depending on your...
It's not
your joining process.
It's not insignificant.
Yeah,
you're still doing a real project, but you don't have to be an expert welder. You don't have to own machine tools, like big real machine tools, which is a huge hurdle to remove.
Yeah. I would argue that you still need to have some pretty significant joining skills.
Yeah.
Whether it's brazing or welding or
Glue.
Yeah. Well, I've seen poor glue work.
Yes. Yes. And I've been learning my lessons with carbon fiber the hard way, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't change the underlying thing of what we're doing. It just removes a lot of the gatekeeping in a way that the economics of doing real shit was.
Yeah, I really like your question.
Yeah.
I really like where you're coming from. And posing it in a way that is kind of like, is this kind of scary?
Yeah.
Kind of confrontational? Like, but I would say that I think there's going to continue to be a very, very big market for people like me who clients trust, because with anything, I mean, a bicycle is a great example of a product that has so many tiny steps, and if you F up X number of tiny steps, you're kind of doing a shitty job.
Mm-hmm.
And so a client really wants to work with someone who is trusted and verified.
Right.
And so when you work with somebody like me, like, if I screw something up, it's not going in a box with your name on it.
Right.
It's going to go either in the trash or get remade. But what I'm saying is, even through those additive, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, lugs made by 3D printing or whatever, you're going to have steps in those processes for mistakes to be made. And now you're just working with, you know, abc.com to get that part with no recourse.
Right.
And, you know, same thing what we've seen in rim manufacturing over the years. I'm sure it'll pan out, but clients are going to continue to want to work with somebody that they trust. Took all the right precautions to make this thing that they're going to go 50 miles an hour on.
Right. And they're not interested in being the expert on They want to be the expert in riding their bike.
That's right. But some people do want to be the expert in building their bike.
Oh, yeah.
And that's totally cool.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to threaten the manufacturing of bicycle industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll continue. I mean, it'll ramp up, but it won't be, I don't think it'll be a huge detractor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
let me see. We're looking at a mountain bike sitting over in the corner there. Is that yours?
It's not.
It's not. It's someone else's. Key Wood.
Is, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, because I've seen your bikes over the years, and I don't know if I've ever asked you this, is like, you know, when I talk about my bikes, mm-hmm. like when I'm building bikes, people say, what kind of bikes do you build? It's like, I build dirt bikes. They go in the dirt. That's mm-hmm. primarily what I do. I build some stuff that goes on pavement too, but that's not really my mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. I build bikes that go in the dirt, particularly mountain bike, trail bikes mm-hmm. that do this stuff well. What is that for you? What's like when you say, when you dissolve it down into that's that one bike that kind of speaks to you and it's mm-hmm. what you're in it for mm-hmm. and it's driving you, what is that bike? How would you describe that bike?
Yeah, that's a really, really hard question to answer. And I would just say, it's a bike.
But you know what you want to go do.
Like, you know, you're looking at a fairly new school 29er hardtail sitting there. But here on the desk, I've got two road disc bikes getting fabricated.
Sure.
So it's a huge mix.
Oh, I know that you build all of these bikes. I'm talking about what's in your heart.
Oh, man.
Spirit animal, you know?
Look,
right there.
I mean, I got everything.
I know you have
it.
Everything.
I do everything.
No, but...
I ride everything.
I know.
You know, I did a 100-mile gravel ride on Saturday. Uh-huh. And then yesterday I did a sweet 16-mile backcountry mountain bike ride.
Right. So you're getting your rides in, too, which is cool.
Yeah.
Because a lot of builders don't actually get in their rides.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you're getting your rides in, and you're doing it on
everything.
A variety of bikes.
Everything. Yeah.
Huh.
So... but if I were really going to try to bias or try to lean towards one bike, it's hard to say, but I don't even want to say, but I mean, it's kind of road.
Really?
And I think it's because that's just what I grew up first doing.
Like you were doing road bikes. That was your
truly bike. Like when I was 10 years old,
sure.
We were going out on, you know, tires pumped up to who knows what PSI.
18 millimeter tires.
And doing fundraising rides and stuff. And then...
Was this with your family?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And as I... But the first bike I ever built, the first frame I ever built, was a mountain bike hardtail.
Uh-huh.
And then when I came to work at Moots, my desire was really to build mountain bikes.
They're certainly the hardest of bikes. Or harder. Like, fat bikes are probably a little harder. But...
Yeah, fat bikes take forever.
Yeah.
But my passion for like that, or that feeling of like the real joy that cycling gives me, I think it's the most pure and precise
mm-hmm.
sometimes when I'm on my road bike.
You like that clean precision.
Efficiency.
Like it's your body, it's the machine, the body, you're working, you're making power, you're moving. That kind of thing? The cleanliness and precision of it?
Yes, but also I think the road bike is, and don't get me wrong, I love everything.
I'm not trying to say that
totally.
You don't have all this stuff. It's just interesting to get to the bottom of like what kind of like, is that the real kind of like inception type of thing of all this stuff?
I think.
Like I grew up a skateboarder. Like to me, it's like skate and destroy. I want to shred. I want things to be going haywire. I like that when I'm riding on wet routes, my tire can be here and then suddenly over here.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. And when I'm downhilling, it's like I was just at North Star. We were downhilling. I was on a hardtail at North Star, which is not easy. And like, it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that insanity.
Yeah.
And I get the, like, I've been doing some gravel rides with Fern Peck. And by the way, she owns one of your bikes.
Yeah.
And she says,
that's
thank
cool.
you very much, because I told her I was going to be here. But she's been trying to do these social gravel rides. And I've been going out and talking with her. And she's a track racer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's her bag.
Yeah.
And she does gravel and stuff now. But, like, you know, she loves track racing. And that's her bag. It's like a whole different thing.
Yeah.
But I joke that downhill's the purest form of cycling,
right?
Because you know? The bike disappears, you know, into the chaos. You know?
Yeah. No, they all have their things, and
yeah.
But for me, that when it just really feels kind of raw,
mm-hmm.
is kind of that road cycling.
Like, do you like the way your body is working, or is it the machine and body, or is it?
I think it's that feeling of knowing that as much energy as possible that you're putting out is going towards propelling you forward.
Uh-huh.
It's just the most direct
right.
transfer of power.
Locomotion.
Yeah.
It's all happening, yeah. and it's happening as a system.
Yeah.
And it's working, and yeah. you can see it. And yeah. and you can see numbers, too.
Yeah.
Like, you can't see shred on the shredometer.
No.
You know?
No, but also, like, oftentimes we'll go mountain biking here, and we'll say, oh, let's go ride this single track over here because it's super windy.
Right.
And we can go get into the trees over here, and it won't even feel windy.
Right.
But if we were out on the road bike, you'd just be getting blasted.
Sure.
And so part of that getting blasted on the road bike is a little bit more pure too,
huh.
because you have to deal with the, you have to.
It's
deal
this
with
variable this, that's like a condition. Monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't really hide from anything
uh-huh.
when you're out on a road bike.
Interesting. That's cool. Mm-hmm. It's nice to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think these are discussions we should have more of. I mean, I'm obviously a total tech guy and I like mm-hmm. to nerd out on stuff, but. You know, like what I tell people is like, at the end of the day, it's about the ride.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm doing all this so that when I'm on the ride, mm-hmm. it's working.
Mm-hmm.
It's the machine and me are doing what we want to do.
Yeah.
And we can get lost, especially in modern discussions about wind tunnels and stiffness
yeah.
numbers
I
and
don't wanna...
all that kind of stuff. And it's like, I feel like there's a lot of losing the ride.
Mm.
You know,
mm-hmm. sure.
That
sure.
feeling and getting into that. And I don't want that to supplant
mm-hmm.
that numbers are important, that we do need to look at the right shit and get it all set up right. But at those numbers serve the ride.
Yeah. 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 Like with the weekend prior, we did my wife and I went up and did just kind of a 50 mile, like adventure mountain bike ride, kind of linking up double tracks and single tracks. And I mean, that's pretty blissful.
It's pretty cool.
You get out there.
I can't do long rides. I'm a short ride guy.
Yeah.
So it's like, obviously.
Downhill. You know?
But I mean, I get my rides. Yeah. Like, one of the good things about Marin and why we've probably ended up with fairly good racers is the fact that you can't shuttle in Marin, or it's very difficult to. So if you're going to ride down the mountain, you have to ride up the mountain.
Yeah.
And there's no getting around that. And it's probably made it so that a guy like me is probably a lot more fit than I otherwise would be because there's just no option. You
yeah.
just have to go get up the hill. And I actually design my bikes in large part. I want a bike that shreds, but like, if you know me and know my designs and know what I'm trying to do, I'm not worried about getting down the hill. I can underbike a descent and have
sure.
a great time.
Mm-hmm.
So what I end up doing oftentimes when you look past the 180 millimeter fork on the hardtail is a bike that is designed to get me up the hill as easy as I can get up the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not gonna get two runs down the mountain unless I climb the hill twice.
Mm-hmm.
And if my bike is just built as a sled,
right.
I'm not gonna be able to do the pedaling that I do. So we've talked before about narrow crank width and things like that and getting
yeah.
better pedaling out of a bike and stuff because, and I'm totally into that because I'm not a road racer. I'm not a power machine. But I do need my bike to work as best it can for the lousy power plant that I am
mm-hmm.
so that I can go do this stuff, which I think can get lost too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, things get optimized like the ultimate cross country bike that climbs, 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 and then the minute you point it down a hill, it's terrible.
Sure.
Like and I think it's probably easier to make something like if you're a shredder, underbiking is always going to be more fun because it just gets more extreme, right? It's like, that's why I ride a hardtail in Marin. It's like riding a full suspension. Sure, it might increase my Strava time,
mm-hmm.
but is it going to be more fun? You know,
mm-hmm.
I ride a hardtail. Yeah, I have a fork because I want to smash into things as hard as I can, but like it's not taking away all the challenge. It's just the underbike thing,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
where it's like, it's easier to underbike if you've got those skills. It's sort of like the really good climbers that suck on the downhill.
Right.
They should have 35 pound bikes. They're gonna get up the hill. That's not their problem. Their problem is not pissing their pants on the way down.
Right.
And it's like, those are the people that need heavy ass bikes that just crush it downhill because that will help them more, right? Anyway.
Yeah, interesting.
What are you excited about with your bikes lately? Like, what's kind of like the new kind of thing that you're looking at? Like, recently I've been talking a lot about flop in bike design and integrating reduced flop designs into aggressive bike geometry type of thing to get better overall handling in the situation. That's been kind of a theme in the last maybe year or two. And me, what's your bag right now? What's kind of affecting your stuff as you go forward?
I mean, I'll be totally honest with you. It's supplying the bike to the client that they want. I mean, I've been super busy.
Are you talking about client understanding the client, communicating with them, or just supply chain shit?
No, I mean, like building the right bike for every individual client. And because everything I do is custom. And so, like, straight up, the last couple of years, I don't think I've done a whole lot of design work on new, you know.
Details.
Yeah, other than, like, I got a seat post I can show you and some other fun stuff. But,
sure.
But no, I've been really focused on.
But, like, your drawing bikes, let's take a look at this print that's in front of me. You know, I'm trying to look at what the design parameters are. You're doing a top.
Total road.
It's still a top tube length design. And let's see.
Is it?
Yeah, it's the driving parameter. Mm-hmm. I can tell because of the round number.
Yeah.
You know. And then we get into head angles. So you're fussing around. What's this number here? You changing it?
Adjust for the jig.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of playing a little bit there.
And adjust for welding distortion.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're changing geometry based, like in the final print, based on what's happened with some distortion? Is that what you're saying?
No, like I'll set the jig up to account for future distortion.
Okay. So that's a 73.5 degree angle that you want. You're going to set the jig up at 73.3. When you're done welding using the protocol that you do, it's going to distort into that angle.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Well, yeah, because the head tube becomes a banana.
Sure.
Yeah. And then depending on the order in which you ream and face the head tube, you can either steepen it or slacken it.
Right.
Basically.
And are you validating these numbers on a surface plate, you know, after this? Or this is based on past experience, so you're validating head angles when you're done. And do you do that for every bike?
Not every single one, no.
Okay.
No.
But enough to know that that's gonna do it. That's going to take care of it. Because you've got enough experience. You know what's going on.
Yeah, the jigs all have some notes on them.
Uh-huh. Oh, interesting. Use drawing, and then adjust by this. That's really cool, dude. See, that's a level of mastery that don't think too many people get to ever.
It takes a lot of bikes.
Yeah, yeah.
To get there.
Yeah.
You know? I've done about 1,000. Done about 1,000 since I came back here with Kent.
Okay, so you came in with Kent after Moots.
Yep.
And you were helping him, and then are you talking 1,000 once your name went on the bike?
No, 1,000 once I came back here with Kent.
Okay,
yeah.
So working with him on bikes and then transitioning into yours.
Yeah, he and I together did probably about somewhere around 400. And then since we took over, I bought the business and then spun it into my brand.
Sure.
We've done somewhere in the realm of 600.
What do you think of running your brand versus, say, when you were with Kent? Say, what would be the thematic difference?
It's all about who's at the helm.
Right. But I mean, you've got to have a different appreciation, obviously, for the leadership or decisions that were being made that maybe at one time you were like, ah, come on, dude, that's so fucking lame or stupid or whatever. And kind of, do you feel like now you're kind of in that position of, shit, this is lame and stupid, just like I was complaining about, but I'm the boss and I get why it's like that or something, you know?
Yeah, I know where you're coming from. I think that like someday I'll be old school.
Right.
Right?
Right. Oh yeah, totally. That question earlier is like me thinking like, what's my shelf life here? It's like, how many years can I get away with, I'm PVD and I know what I'm talking about. Pretty soon I'm going to be like, I'm Gramps. And it's like, what are you talking about, old man?
Right. You just got to keep an open mind.
Sure.
And when I worked under Kent here, you know, we have a really good working relationship. Like, we can hammer things off each other. Uh-huh. We're really good at back and forth. But in the end, every bike that he built in that time period was an Ericsson, and it was
had his name.
Yeah, so it was his final call.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you know, definitely there were some bikes that I would want to tweak, and it was all just goes to the newer geometry.
And you're 20 years younger than him, or whatever.
Yeah, thereabouts. Yeah.
So
yeah,
that
yeah.
you're going to have a different perspective, and that's yeah. natural.
Yeah.
That's
well, how and the world maybe works. Just my peer group of riders, I was seeing the trends
sure.
moving a certain way,
right.
and so. You know, so that's why I ride with 12-year-olds now.
I was at North Star with 30-year-olds.
Yeah.
I ride with people that are 20 to 25 years younger than
totally.
Me. And I ride with people my age, and I'm like, are you fucking joking, bro? Like,
yeah.
like that shit's tired, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I know, and it blows me away, too, how people would nitpick over, like, a centimeter of front center.
Right.
You know,
I'm guilty.
Well,
sure. A front center, of course, because that's my big number.
For sure. But in reality, I mean, we should be nitpicking over like 80 millimeters of front center.
When it comes like, down to it, what's going to do? But we have yeah. thematic differences on bike type thing. It's like if you look at, like, say, an open up mm-hmm. where it's like they're like 8 inches short.
Yeah,
you know,
can you
like
give
that,
me some more toe overlap.
Like, yeah, like, are you designing for maximum toe overlap here? And how is this helping me crash harder when I go off-road?
They're just prepping for the future of like 140 cranks.
Yeah, exactly. The short crank era is coming.
Yeah.
I mean, how's that? Like, okay, we're talking about what's coming, what's trending now, talking about, you know, you're mm-hmm. being with, mm-hmm. you've been with younger people and you're trying to keep track of that. What do you think is a trend that's gonna come up or a thing that the bike industry is going to move to that you think people don't see right now? Like with your eyes, kind of like what's on
well,
the horizon?
Well, then I'd be the genie.
Well, I mean, one thing I talk about, because I've dealt with a number of people like you in terms of like you build and it pays your rent. Mm-hmm. You know, you make bikes that make you a living and you have to make a bike that doctor, lawyer, or Indian chief is gonna pay full price for, because mm-hmm. that's the model, right? It's easy for me to throw snowballs because all I have to do is make the next bike I like. Mm-hmm. And when I don't have to make customers that are asking for like tired ass old shit, because that's what they grew up, they wanted a 56 square bike. Mm-hmm. And it's like, dude, what are you talking about? But the thing is you have to build that because that's gonna pay your bills. But the thing is, it's like, you as the professional builder can get held back from what you want to do.
It's true.
And you might run a risk of yeah. alienating the people that will really pay the bills, especially in your market. I mean, you're in the dentist area of the world. And it's like, those guys are definitely not getting like full booter shred machines.
No,
they're going to get some bike.
Right.
Right. And they're going to get some bikes that are a little bit more predictable. If you look at the numbers, mm-hmm. like
sure.
what, And so you kind of, I believe you would be a little bit limited in terms of where you might want to go or where you think these things should be going.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you kind of, or what's your hunch on some of that?
You know, I think that, I mean, I don't know how to phrase it other than like, kind of like where's the excitement going to trend and what niche of that, but it really seems like the adventure world of cycling is just going to get bigger and bigger. And that's where I see maybe some changes. The whole whole cycling industry is so broken up now into all of these different niches,
and e-bikes have just driven a wall through things.
E-bikes are not even on my radar.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Uh-huh.
But
it's quite a difference when you see the direction that's taking things too. That's outside of your world type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm a big fan, you know, I came into the bike world with or the building of my own bikes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially during a time when it was like that do it all wonder bike. the bike that was the one bike to rule them all.
Right.
And, you know, while I'm all about the trail bike, the mountain bike with a fork and everything like that, you know, I've been working on the all road problem a lot. And I really, really like that. And I find it very exciting in a way that you're talking about, probably in that I think it's an excellent platform for so many adventures, short and long.
Mm-hmm.
Like the half hour after work or the 12 hours in the outback
type of thing. 4 days in a row.
4 days in a row and all that stuff. Yeah. And there's a lot of value to that platform. And I just feel like I mentioned at that thing I did at Philly Bike Expo is the real shame of it is that, you know, the road marketing people took it over and it's turned into road races in the dirt on ag roads in Kansas, which has killed the fucking all road bike because we have bikes that are good for road races in the dirt in Kansas on ag roads, which I mean, if you live in Kansas, that's probably awesome. Mm-hmm. But most of the people I know live in Northern California or Colorado or something like that. And it's like, that bike sucks. That's being evolved around this racing class that's shaping so much of all road. And there's so much more in my mind.
So I think that's maybe how I ended up doing what I do is because being custom and working with every client, like every bike is not the same at all. You learn who they are, where they're living, what, you know, how much they're riding, what kind of riding they're doing. And then the industry now offers so many great component options, whether it's a, you know, this fork or that fork and this drivetrain and that drivetrain. But I mean, knowing what exists in the world to pull from,
sure,
to build that bike that's going to give them a big smile, that's what makes it fun for me.
It's like skateboarding in the late 90s, where it was like, oh, you want big wheels, you want small wheels, you want wide boards, you want narrow boards. Or it's like you could just mix and match and do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And it wasn't overrun by one particular thing or frame.
Right, right. And that's going to continue to drive the progression is as, you know, one thing, as people keep going towards one thing more and more, oh, hey, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, let's keep moving towards that. So that's what really makes it fun, and that's, you know, every client offers me like the chance to do something new.
Uh-huh. So we talk about your particular take on bikes. You're talking to a lot of clients. I don't know what your throughput is. What do you do, like 2 bikes a week or something?
Thereabouts.
Something like that. So you're talking to that 100 people a year about real bikes that are being made.
Yeah.
What's your take talking to these people on kind of what's happening among them?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you hearing when you talk to these customers?
I'm hearing, well, again, it's so diverse. Whether it's like, I've built some pretty long, low slack 29ers. You know, I mean, nothing too crazy, but like 63 head angles and, you know, and pretty long bikes. So I hear it, you know, it's hard for me to just kind of narrow down to one genre.
Right, because you probably have like
four
groupings of customers or so like that.
Or more. Like right now I've got from like, you know, I think my youngest client right now is like 25.
Uh-huh.
And my oldest is probably, I think he's late 60s. Is my oldest client right now. So it spans 40 years.
Right.
So I talk to a huge range of people.
Right. But I mean, is there anything cool that you're hearing like that you kind of sparking on you where you're like, that's kind of interesting what's going on.
Well, what I do, again, it kind of goes back to that like monster gravel kind of adventure bike or that.
The do-all,
but it's a do-all for the right person.
Right.
Because you put that bike under somebody who doesn't enjoy that kind of riding,
sure,
they're just going to be like, this is the dumbest thing ever.
Right. Like, no one in Florida wants to ride my bikes. You know? Like, I don't care what age they are. They don't want to ride it.
I've got a couple clients in Florida right now.
Right, right. It's just a whole different thing.
Yeah. But, and I have an example of one actually back there for a guy that's I can show you that's pretty neat. But I do.
How much time do you have, by the way? I don't want to ruin your whole world.
I'm open. I just wanted to get you whatever you were looking for.
I'm trying to look for a window into who you are, you know?
Yeah. This is kind of who I am.
Uh-huh. Cool. This is still recording. We're 40 minutes in.
Yeah.
And it's I can talk all day. You've seen that.
I know.
So you can shape the time frame here, you're all good.
Sure.
Because I love this shit. I totally do. And you totally love this shit, too.
Yeah, and if you're, if you want to... If you want to open some drawers and look at some stuff.
I do. I want to do a survey round of pictures, and I want to do some of that. How about this? Why don't you hold this? Uh-huh. This is recording our voices. And I'll just start taking pictures, and we'll talk about things I'm taking pictures of.
Yeah. So, I'll just kind of give you a shop tour.
Okay, cool.
Because that's kind of the easy way to go, right?
Right.
So this has... the space we're in... This did not exist when Moots was first founded.
And this is the original Moots location.
Correct. Uh-huh. Yep. But this is where many a Moots bike has been welded here. When I first came out here in early 97 for a job interview, I sat right here and did some welding.
How many people were in this facility?
Well, upstairs, and you'll see in the back here, it's a little cavernous.
Uh-huh.
At that time, I think there were five or six. I think I was the sixth or seventh employee at that time.
What year was this, what we're talking about?
97.
So this is where the magic happens, this welding table.
Yeah.
That everybody probably wonders... How do you make that?
So this is my little rotary welder.
Okay, yeah.
Have you ever seen that guy?
I have. I don't know if I've seen yours. I've seen similar type stuff.
I've got a YouTube video.
Wow, that's pretty fancy. So you got 4 points lock on it, and that's just speed.
It's got that. And then it's got a DT Swiss.
Oh, look at that.
So you can ratchet.
Your tools are gorgeous. Now, a lot of this machining you've done, or... Have you used oaks?
I made all this.
Uh-huh.
But I use oaks for quite a few parts. Uh-huh. And then, of course, I buy quite a few things from Paragon as well.
Right.
This is like the welding toolbox.
Right.
So
Lots of heat sinks.
Heat sinks and some of those regular tools you need, stuff that's like...
Consumably.
Spacers.
Yeah. Just standoffs.
Yeah, just all kinds of randomness,
Well, look at this. This is cool. This is probably like all the weird kind of purging things.
Yep,
kind of holding argon
stuff. Odd purging stuff. Some sparky tools.
Oh my, what is this for?
This guy.
Oh, it's for different types of head tubes while you're welding.
Well, so it does like couplers and seat tubes and...
Mm-hmm.
Just randomness.
So you do any of those round fusion-y type mm-hmm. welds you're doing here? Are you adding material at all? Or
depends on the part. Okay. Depends on what I want to achieve.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
What's say the difference between a part that would be fusion versus a part where you'd add that?
Well, like say a seat stay splitter.
Uh-huh.
Probably add some material.
Okay.
So I do coupler stems sometimes,
uh-huh.
and I've been messing around with doing...
When you do a coupler stem, what's the reasoning for that?
So you don't have to, reset your bars
every
time.
And you don't have, a machined mark location or some sort of thing like that?
Well, you don't have... Also, it's like you don't have to reset your headset.
Mm-hmm.
With the new Z couplers, you don't... One tool does all.
Right, those are beautiful.
So,
beautiful.
And stem tools.
Oh gosh, that stuff's so shiny.
Stem tooling.
Wow, I'm jealous. these are some good drawers, dude.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm gonna bring home the bacon and with these pictures. Wow.
So
for
making my full suspension.
Uh-huh.
Yoke. These are old tools.
Yeah, yeah.
This is getting
old. I have drawers full of aluminum with holes.
I still use them though. I still use them. Sure. It's like, I got. This all gets used. These are all totally random.
I think any frame builder is going to have a drawer full of all kinds of weird aluminum things.
These are presses that I made.
The complex stuff is when it really starts showing.
It's a
form.
It's a form that I made for the hydraulic press.
Right.
Just so much of that. This one was really a bear, but it was fun to make. So this is a roller.
a roller press.
And that's for a curving sheet?
For curving sheet metal, yeah.
To just the right radii.
And it's got a, to hold the part in place.
And is that a consumable mount hole for that? Like you'll make it with that hole and then you grind it off later?
Exactly. Yep.
This is your grinder.
Yeah. So my wife is now the pro tungsten grinder.
Oh, cool. Yeah. We'll keep her radioactive, right?
No. I got 25 years of it. And then this is for...
You know, I saw this stand, I think, on some interview you did somewhere. Yeah. It is gorgeous. Yep. By the way,
it works
really nice.
Wonderfully, yeah.
And probably the people that are doing a lot of welding, this is what they're really grooving on. Is this because this is like weld in a chair, weld a frame.
Totally.
And be able to move it around any way you want. Stuff
yeah,
like that.
Pull the hoses. Drop them straight down.
So they're not, you're not tripping all over them or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got three hoses. What do you change between argon and helium?
No, it's all just argon.
So what's up with the three just different locations?
Well, yep. And then oftentimes you're...
Jeez, look at that array. Like for one dude, you know?
Yeah. Probably have to build a new manifold for the new shop. It'll have to be a little prettier.
Yeah, make it all pretty.
But the lower ones I use for working on the table.
Uh-huh.
And then the three are for working on the frame.
Uh-huh.
And usually you have two going into the frame. And then one is like an external purge. So if you want to add a purge.
Right. So it's backing
up
over it and stuff like that.
Yep.
Oh, so let me just look at this bender here. It's always nice to see a bender.
Yeah.
So and that's like a seat stay type of thing.
Correct. Yeah.
Probably for fat bikes.
Nope. No? For road and gravel.
Oh, really? Okay.
That guy. Yeah. And then like, nice. Damn.
God, just your tool making time must be crazy. I mean, I know you've got years and years, but like, this is a lot of tooling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, did any of this come over while you were at Moots? And
with Kent.
With Kent.
A lot of this is Kent's.
Oh, so like you're adopting into Kent stuff as well.
Yeah.
Okay, look at all those dropouts. So what's up with those dummies right here? These guys look pretty different from what I'm used to seeing. Like
they're specific to my dropout.
Okay.
So
you'll clock it.
Yeah, that's what's, again, so it kind of goes back to making things that are really, functional for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But so you can see, like, this.
Right,
this guy
right.
Bolts into the dropout.
Uh-huh.
And then it clocks.
Right.
To that. So the dropout is concentric. The axle is concentric to the hood.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes like flat mount setups super easy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about.
Sure.
So I designed just to try to make flat mount bikes easier.
Yeah.
Because they're a pain.
Oh, it is a nightmare even when it gets easier. It's like, I did my own brake mount system in part because of that. You know, you've seen the PVD sidewinder
stuff.
Yeah,
this is all just, it's all just...
Oh, those are cool ones. That's a pretty row of parts.
Yeah. So here.
Okay, cool. And this is your plate. So you do alignment here or measurement?
Pretty much anything that needs alignment, I do here.
Smaller titanium frames are notorious for needing an insane amount of leverage to get straight if you have to cold set it.
If you have to.
Right. I was just figuring that's where it's going to go. So you make them straight. So
incredible. Incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you like.
Right. God, look at you.
You know.
That's some good shit, dude. That's like higher level shit.
I mean, that was December 22nd, 2021.
Uh-huh. So if you do that, and you have a procedure for your welding that you don't deviate from so that that stuff all works.
Like, no shit. I can show you some finished welded frames back there, but two of them literally went to the alignment table, got set up. No shit. Over 2 feet was zero.
Wow.
Like, I'm not even kidding.
Sure, sure.
I'm sure my rod is not even that precise.
Right, right, right. No, but the thing is, it's like, it's a bicycle, like, and also it's just like, wow, that's crazy.
Well, and bikes.
I figured, like, did you see my frame picture where I'm using a shaft so that I can support both sides of the bottom bracket shell?
I haven't seen that, but I'll...
You should take a look at that, because Cyberdyne will show it off. But the thing is that I was frustrated with like, yeah, that's great. You're doing an awesome job on one side, and this other side can go fucking anywhere.
I hear you. Yeah.
And it's like, so I got a taper, I got a tapered sleeve that goes in so that if there's distortion, you can still get it off and everything like that. But it's like, this side can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Versus right now, like with the Bolt style, you know, you can theoretically imagine it wandering all over the
place.
And
it's
like, that would be a cool addition to the old Supermaster picture.
And I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I know that this is, like, these are good.
Sure.
But there's more than one way to do it.
Well, and, I mean.
But at some point, though, you just have to do it.
Sure.
And then you just have to keep doing it, and you got to get it. You got to get it right.
Anybody like us that have done stuff, you know, there's a point at which you just have to push print.
Yeah.
You just have to be making bikes. And it's like, that tool needs a change. That tool needs a change. You could go around the shop and probably think of 3 years worth of work to do. Yep. But the thing is, meanwhile, you have to build bikes.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's been painstaking to get to this point.
But
you get there.
Right. One thing I'm doing that's probably similar to what you're doing in some ways, in that I don't have anybody else really to look at for a lot of the things I do.
Mm-hmm.
I can't copy other people's work because nobody, in large part, are working where I'm trying to work. And I'm sure with like the level you're trying to work with here on these types of things and accomplish some of the stuff you're doing, who is there to copy from? When you go into anybody else's shop and you're like, oh, that's like 15 years ago when I was having a bad day.
Like, I remember doing that at Moots when I first started.
Right. I stopped doing that a long time ago. And it's like, if you go to anybody else's shop, I mean, how many other people's shop are you envious of? That's a good question.
Right.
Like, whose tooling and shop for making bikes do you go and look at and go, son of a bitch, oh, that's awesome.
I need to do it like
Right. Who is
that? Yeah, nobody.
Nobody, see, it's hard to, when you, and that's the thing that the younger people or the newer people have to their advantage. Like when I grew up, there was no PBD. I couldn't read about this shit, like crazy stuff like that. Or the stuff that you're doing that I'll be posting pictures of, that didn't exist. There was nobody to copy from. It's like when I first started, it's like there was Marchetti and Lang. Or there was what's his name? Henry James. Where you're looking at that fixture and you're like, really? So we go from there to there. That's it?
I built my first fixture based off of like looking at Henry James pictures. And I was like, okay, wait a second. So now when I take the head tube out, I lose everything.
Oh, well, like, how about Anvil Journeyman?
This isn't going to work.
to get a bike out of an Anvil Journeyman, you know, just change every setting on the fixture.
Yep.
And then kind of drag it out.
And there's some truth to that with these as well.
Sure.
100%. Like,
well, no fixture is perfect.
No, but the next bike I build is not going to be that bike.
Sure.
So it's okay.
Right. Adjustability and quick adjustability, like I made my more recent stuff. It's like they're designed to be tool room tools, not rapid setup custom tools.
Right. Sure.
And there's a difference for everything.
Yeah. Yep. Some stems.
I love the binder lugs that you have on your stems. They're really nice.
Yeah, and those are efficient. And this, the stem is really, you know, a lot of Oaks manufacturing parts. So he does the binder and he does the back plate and face plate.
Are they your designs, his manufacturer?
Yeah.
Or his? Okay.
Yeah, and they're actually a super.
Can I handle this?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, and they're actually.
It's a gorgeous clamp.
It's a super pain in the ass because you can see that that's a taper.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So the machining on that. It has to be extremely precise.
And is he surfacing or is he doing it with the side of a tool or something?
Yeah, I believe he's doing it with the side of a tool.
Like on a 5-axis or something?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Or he's doing it. Anyway, I'm not even sure. He might be getting custom cut cutters.
Oh, that'd be cool, yeah.
But you can see like the ears.
Yep.
If it's off, it's no good. It just doesn't look right.
It won't meet up correctly.
It just doesn't look right.
I've designed a few things like that, and then of course they made a little off, and then it's like, ugh.
And this is a really, really wonderful lathe.
And what's the through spindle?
It's like 2 1/16 or just a hair over.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
and it's not that big.
It's tiny.
Right.
But it still weighs 4,500 pounds.
And, and pretty much anybody that I know that has a Morris AP is just like, I got one. Yeah. It's sort of like if you have a Hartage. It's like, yeah. You got one of these, or you, and you, if you had a Hartage on the other side, you'd be the guy.
No, you, what you really want is a Clausing.
Oh, a Clausing, not Clausing lathe.
Clausing horizontal.
Okay, so that's what one thing I was going to ask you, because I'm a Hartage guy. I used to work with Hartage CNC machines, and I have a Hartage in my shop, and I've always wanted, when I finally got to the point where I could get one of these, I wanted to get a Hartage, not a Nichols, because of course everybody wants a Nichols, and you're saying the Clausing's the one. So talk to me about Clausing versus Nichols versus Hartage.
For me, it comes down to these have a little bit more, have a little tiny bit more travel. Tiny. Uh-huh. Tiny bit more travel, but the ergonomics are better.
Uh-huh. And these have machine feed?
No.
No,
I
do all manual feed?
I do manual. Yeah, I've got, in the other room, I've got one.
Does this have the model number? Okay,
I think it's an 8450 or 8540.
Sure. It's always good to get the model numbers on these.
Yeah.
It's like
but so it's really the ergonomics.
Mm-hmm. Because you can see and you can handle while you're looking around.
Yeah, if you look at the height of the spindle off the floor.
Okay, the height, a little lower on the Clausing.
Yeah, it's a little bit lower. Uh-huh. And then the start and stop is up here versus here.
Oh, I hate that. I hate when you have to reach around a machine to do
so,
that stuff.
Yeah, so the Clausings are a baller.
Okay, so where's the data plate on this? I'm a data plate guy, of course.
I don't even know if they have them on the hard
edge. They've got to have a data plate.
These, and also I believe the Clausings, are newer machines.
Okay. But I mean, whereas, how's this, like, Hartage versus Nichols? No comparison?
I don't know. I've never run a Nichols.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I can't say.
Because I'm like New England frame builder guy where everybody's all nickeled out. Okay, so you've got nice dedicated tooling here. So you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 horizontal mills dedicated setups in your shop.
Yeah, and then I've got an eighth and a ninth.
That are just collecting dust.
And a tenth.
Okay, that's, for, I mean, especially for small size horizontal mills, it's probably the biggest collection I've seen in a frame builder's shop.
Yeah, I believe it. And these two are amazing as well. So these are Bridgeports.
Okay, the Bridgeport horizontal.
Yeah, these are the 1ES.
Okay.
Which you can't really, they're pretty hard to find in the U.S.
Uh-huh. Why is that?
These are, they're Adcock Shipleys. So they're from the U.K.
Okay, so they got made in, like during the war or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Or they were contract copies.
Sounds good.
Okay, cool.
I'm not certain.
Like they weren't actually Bridgeports, they were just branded Bridgeports.
See, it's from Leicester, England. It's a 1ES.
Sure. Okay, that's cool. Wow.
Yeah, that's...
I learn something every day.
But these are amazing because they're so rigid.
Uh-huh.
Because these, obviously, you can see...
It's obvious the table's so
a little
much
bigger.
More girthy.
Yep. But the
so you can do a heavy cut versus...
Oh, yeah. And this one's got power... Cut or power cross.
Right.
And then like this guy's just set up for slotting.
Right. I mean, just the time savings that you've got there is so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I don't have any dedicated anything, and it's just like, okay, you got a vertical mill. But I mean, I understand that most frame builders don't have a lathe or a vertical mill.
Right. I know.
And it's like, we're talking on a whole different type of thing here.
Yeah. But, and that's always been, I've been buying up some additional ones so I can get even more dedicated setups at the new shop.
What kind of floor plan increase are you going to see at your new shop?
The square footage is almost identical.
Okay, but it's more
it's
more
one
sensible.
It's one big room.
Right.
With no pole, no...
I mean, this isn't that bad. I mean, obviously, you're a well-ordered, not... You're not hyper meticulous from I've seen in the grand scheme of things, but it's obvious there's everything has a place.
Mm-hmm.
There's a method to all of this.
Yeah.
And it's not cluttered. It's not messy. But you got to make things happen in this space.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And this space is very special.
Okay.
Like it's because this is where Moots was started. It just has a lot of
history,
cool history.
Right.
And it'll be sad to leave.
Right.
But you know, but I'll also be able to start kind of create my own.
Well, you'd be able to buy a CNC machine too.
Yeah, right. Right. But yeah, this is one of the rigs I was talking about. Like it has about the, that's like the biggest tire this bike would ever see.
Right.
Ever see by far. Right. He'll probably be running smaller, but.
So that's what I design. If I'm designing a gravel bike, and granted I don't do it for customers or whatever, but if I was making my bike wife one, 2.1s are my target size.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, mainly because when I'm looking at gravel, it's an off-road bike. It's probably going to go down the trail, you know, and all that stuff. It's not trying to be a road bike that goes off-road.
Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff.
I hear you. Cool.
Yeah. And then we've got...
And these are all Ed's. My employees.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He just has a collection.
He has a collection, and this...
Are any of them super-duper special?
And letting him hang here means his wife's a lot happier.
And you can count on him, so that's worth its weight in gold.
So there is the... where's the one with the original... I thought it was still up here. He might have moved it.
Well, look at this. You have all your pile of dead pulsers.
Yeah.
The forgotten toys.
Oh, this one right here has got the original Ruby on it.
Oh, God. You know, I'm just going to, like, represent my camp and just not even take a picture.
Yeah, sure.
Because, you know.
I hear you. just material.
Yeah, that's nice. So how long is that material going to last you?
Till retirement.
Oh, okay. So you're all set. Cool. All right.
Kind of. In a couple sizes, I'm all set.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
And a couple sizes, I'm not.
And did you buy that intentionally, or were you specking good lots and stuff like that? But like that far ahead and everything?
Just know, like, there's a Thai bike is always going to use X2, like certain Thai bikes.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
They just are.
Like in steel, it's like 1 3/8 by 0.35.
Right.
It's like, you've got to go through it.
Same in Thai.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, so. And then I don't know if it's on here, but that's like random materials for making tools.
Just all sorts of more toys. It's kind of the bike builder's dream shop in terms of, you know, I've seen amazing tools in shops. Like you know, Josh Ogle.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
go
yeah.
to his shop and it's like, the shit he's doing is amazing, like crazy jewelry stuff. But it's a very compact, refined space, and it's largely running that CNC.
Yeah.
Right?
Right, totally.
And versus here, it's like, you've got such a range and all sorts of different kind of tools at different eras and everything like that. And it's like, it's as high end as it needs to be and almost no higher, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a very efficient level of tooling in a sense where it's like, you don't have a machine in the corner that you're paying a mortgage on.
Right.
That's not earning.
Right.
Exactly. And that kind of thing is the way it looks.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Try to be smart, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta be. And we got like glass cabinet. So for like the glass media.
Uh-huh. And that's cool. You got a window through the back so that you're not wasting a lot of floor space.
Well, no, it just is how the building is, right?
Uh-huh.
So you have to put the frame in there and then you have to access the cabinet in here.
Oh my God, look at this. You got two more horizontal. Okay, dude, this is like, you've got like everything west of the Mississippi or something going on here. Okay, I see that.
Yeah.
But then you've got this big glass cabinet. So you've got two huge glass cabinets. Well, not huge, but this is a fairly big glass cabinet.
And this one's just for doing etching, like, so this is a coarse aluminum oxide.
Okay.
For doing our logos etched. Right. Over the fine bead
so blast. You do the fine bead blast, and this is coarser so that it makes the mark that stands out.
Yeah, yeah.
And you need the room to kind of not screw things up here and kind of...
Yeah, I mean, it just, this is the smallest one they had that would fit a large frame.
Sure, sure. Right? Like a frame that, as big as the one we just looked
at. Right, exactly.
And when you get into your shop, you've probably already done a floor plan, you got it all laid out so that it makes sense.
Yeah.
And do you have abrasive areas and clean areas?
We have like an abrasive room.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but that's really it. Like then from there, the whole space is wide open.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You must be so excited.
We're definitely excited. It's been a project to get there.
And like another thing I wanted to talk about, like, okay, this is Steamboat, long history, you know. You
did capture the Brooks handles, right?
Well, you gotta have the what is it, the string with the beeswax or whatever on there, on that tool. You know, Steamboat, you got Ken Erickson, you've got Moots, you've got Butch or whatever, and like all the people. Yeah, yeah. And the industry that's here is this this boutique titanium industry located in the middle of a tourist town in middle of Colorado. What's the culture like here, you know, in terms of like, you go down to the coffee shop and you'll see two or three people you've worked with or or anything like that in terms of like, are people working at Moots for a while and then they kind of start doing their own thing, or they're within cycling, they try to start to do different venture, or like, what does it feel like here? Because it's not an industrial town.
Yes.
It's not a working class town or something like that.
No.
And if you're going to be doing this stuff that you do, it's a very finely focused group of people.
Yeah. Yeah. It is an entrepreneurial town though.
Okay.
It is. We've had quite a few businesses that you would know of started here.
Okay.
Smart Wool.
Sure.
Honey
sure.
Stinger. Big Agnes
right.
tents.
So they get going.
Boa.
Boa?
You know, the Boa? Clickers on your shoes.
Oh, okay. Yep. So an industrial designer starts.
Yeah.
Here.
So there's actually, there's more industry here than you would think.
Huh.
It's kind of hidden.
Right. Because you've got that passionate crowd. They want to be here.
Well, I think that it comes with like playing hard comes people like a lot of folks like that I've seen guys like Bill Gamber, who started Big Agnes and Honey Stinger and such. Like he, for example, like works hard, plays hard,
right.
loves life, loves Colorado,
uh-huh.
you know, and that's kind of how I think that I am as well.
Uh-huh.
I want to work really, really hard. I want to play super hard.
Right. Well, it sounds like you're doing a real ride.
And oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like I'm really hoping to do a 150 this Saturday. Huh. So like,
and that's off road.
It'll be a mixed. It'll be just a mixed surface, like big.
When
big.
Did you stop racing?
I've just done some local races this year. Nothing crazy at all.
I gave up on racing like 2017, 18.
Yeah.
I said that's it.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
I've always hated this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it anymore.
It's not going to get any more fun.
Yeah, it's only getting more terrible.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it anymore.
But
look at this funny frame here. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's an adjustable bottom bracket height.
Oh, that's cool. And just for a test rig, something old.
We don't even know who built it.
Really?
I swear.
Huh.
Crazy.
I mean, nice enough welding and stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's put together pretty good.
Uh-huh.
For what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pure mule.
Yeah.
I mean, we can see what era it was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, but anyways, this town, yeah, for sure. Like, I've got strong relationships with people at Moot still.
Sure. Oh, and, here's some more Benders. I'll take a picture. I love Bender stuff.
Yeah.
You should see some of the Bender stuff I did. I haven't done I have this Bender set up that I haven't really fully evolved. It's like generation two, but it's pretty cool.
Mm.
And I want to take it to the next level, but I'm just not ready to push it out there, but it's some pretty cool stuff. I've learned a lot about bending with that.
That's super cool. Yeah.
The double roller was the trick one. So, you got a follow block on any of these?
No, these are
all just
rollers.
So, like, just to pass on something that I've learned, like, so if you had a follow block roller, right? Mm-hmm. So that this would just be a roll and then
on top of a block, yeah.
Right, on top of a block.
Yep.
So the trick is you don't do a single. You do two spread out as far as you can. Because if you don't... It doesn't actually follow tangent and it crushes one side. But if you do two... It stays at the tangent.
Yeah, sure.
And it's like...
That's a simple enough solution, but you wouldn't know until you...
Every bender I look at is a single roller.
Yeah,
and I'm like, you got to do a double. The minute I did that on my roller, it was like, oh shit. I just like went down an inch in centerline radius in terms of what I was able to do. Just by adding a second roller.
Yeah, interesting.
It was crazy.
That's really cool.
And I was like, wow. It's cool. And then now it's like I look at benders and I'm like, nope. You know?
Regardless of, like, because if you're making it like a zero gap.
I don't do zero gaps.
Yeah.
This one's based on a JD2 because I wanted to build around like a JD squared bending setup.
Okay.
Tube and pipe bender.
Yeah.
It's industrial stuff because I wanted stuff that I could buy dies real easy. Because, you can do diacro, but you're going to have custom dies made every time you want to do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, so who's making dies? Well, JD2's making dies. And I got a hydroelectric bender because then I don't need to have it bolted to the floor.
Right.
Right? And then I'm like, if you look at my more recent fixtures, it's like they're all built on welding tables. So like my next bender is going to go off of the JD2 frame, just modified dies, and then built on welding table for tooling. And I'll have a modular tooling table where I can build a bender, hydroelectric bending on a welding table.
Yeah.
And I'm going to fucking go crazy with that. But that's, you know, in the future. Yeah, totally. You know, we can't do everything we dream of doing at one time.
Yeah.
It's just always like that sneaky project. What's a sneaky tooling project you're thinking of
in the
future?
Moving away from tooling.
Okay.
I've always been a sucker for seat posts.
Okay.
So, and I do use the Cobra bender for some tight radius.
Yeah, see, like that's one where it's like if that had a second roller. Oh my god. Oh, that's pretty wild. So you're doing a taper, but I mean, I'm not an expert on like what is it that Envy clamp system.
Uh-huh.
And what you're gonna have to tell me what makes this different from the Envy system because
it's definitely not at all like the Envy.
Uh-huh.
But we do sell quite a lot of seat posts. And so like years ago I designed the Moot Cinch post, which has independent fore aft adjustability, like the SRAM access dropper, you know how you can kind of adjust the angle without messing with the fore aft.
Okay, yeah.
Right, so this has an inner bolt, right?
Right.
And then,
I mean, this looks familiar that I've seen over the years, but there's something you're doing new. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's really a play on my cinch post design.
Uh huh.
So basically, you've got that outer bolt, and you can still access the inner bolt.
Okay, so the outer bolt tightens the rails.
The rails.
In the fore aft, and the center bolt adjusts the angle.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, so you don't lose one.
It's very tidy.
You don't lose one when you go to the other.
Right.
But one of the tricks through the design process, and it took me a while to get here, of course, everything takes me forever.
Well, nothing easy, bro.
Once I decided to go with a captured bolt. Can you see that? So there's a threaded insert.
Mm-hmm. So it can't pop out.
So,
Are these custom parts?
Yeah, so these are Paragon. Well, actually, those aren't, but the next batch... The production batch is Paragon.
You're having Paragon machining?
Yeah, he's working on them.
Is he going to brand them or they stay separate to you?
Right.
Uh-huh.
So that captures the bolt.
Right.
So it's pretty tidy. You just epoxy that in.
Uh-huh.
So it's a... And then it's a not a replaceable part.
Right, right.
You replace that whole
thing.
It's an assembly. But it shouldn't fail, you know.
Right, right, right. There's no reason why it would fail.
Yeah. So yeah, so it's kind of fun.
Hmm.
Kind of fun. But basically I was just trying to get away from the existing seat post platform that we sell.
Where everything's loosens up
one bolt and everything just gets loose.
Right.
But also I wanted to create a platform that I could more easily design some carbon rail compatible parts.
Right. And you have this taper that mates in there, which probably does a lot for holding, you know, because I can, know, we've been mountain biking for a long time. I've used posts where, you know, you land wrong off-road and now your seat's in a different position.
Right.
Type of thing. And I'm sure this has a huge holding pattern, but granted, we're in the age of the dropper post.
Yes.
But this generally ends up on road.
Road, gravel.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And definitely mountain bikes, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, bike packing. And
sure, they're not slamming around as hard.
Not quite as hard, but they are hanging bags off their saddles.
Right, right.
Which gets all a little ridiculous.
All that luggage stuff gets crazy. Yeah. I'm glad I don't have to deal with that. It's interesting, it's just, I don't want to make luggage mounts.
So that's been kind of fun. And we use a big breaker bar. I use a 3-foot steel for doing testing.
Mm-hmm.
And then just some force, you know, just some like
strain gauges.
Yeah,
and
just
stuff
some
like that.
Analog stuff for testing them, and that's just simple stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
fun.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, you've given me way more than I was expecting. And here, I'll take a picture of this. I guess, is there anything that I took a picture of or we talked about that you wouldn't want to be in the public sphere or anything like that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, no.
If you think of anything.
That's all legit. That's
if you think of anything, let me know. I'm going to put this up on my blog because I'm trying to, like, get people to see, you know, just stuff, what people do in a way.
Yeah.
Because largely, you're going to get a magazine come here. They're going to take pictures of the different stuff.
I'll show you real quick before you get out.
Cool.
I'll show you the upstairs.
It always pisses me off. Like, some magazine will come talk to you, and they show a picture of, like, something, and it's like, what? Like, there's so much in that shop that I'd want to see. That ain't it, you know?
So.
And this is the office.
Yeah, so it's kind of a mess right now because we thought we were moving.
Okay, and this is bike assembly.
Yeah.
Okay, this is cool. Let me take a picture of this shop.
Yeah.
And so you do fully built bikes for customers.
The majority is fully built.
And
yeah.
And then you ship them.
Yeah.
This thing's gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet. Wow.
Road bike. It's her second from us.
Those blues are crazy. They really go with the tie. I mean, obviously tie in blue, right? But, wow.
She's got a gravel bike from us. Her husband surprised her with a road bike.
Wow, what a nice guy.
Yeah.
And do you build the wheels, or does Ed, your guy, build the wheels?
Like, for instance, these ones were built at Chris King.
Sure.
And it just depends on what we're doing, but we do, but Ed builds them, definitely. Ed builds all the wheels.
So you stay on the fabrication and design stuff. You let the bike mechanics handle the bike mechanic.
I'll build wheels for myself every now and then. Sure. Yeah. But only because I feel bad for making him do it.
Yeah, right.
But we also do, like, you know, these are Chris King. These are straight from Chris King.
Right.
We also get some straight from NV. It just depends on the client.
But also, I'm sure, like, a lot of these houses are going to, when you call up, they're probably eager to do stuff for you in ways they might not with someone else.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, and then this is like this is an all-road bike for a guy. You know, it's got 32 millimeter road tires on it now, but it can fit up to 40s.
Mm-hmm. And obviously a tall dude.
Tall dude, yeah, very tall.
This is a darker blue.
Yeah.
Do you see a lot of color match with everybody these days, or what?
Quite a bit. Yeah, quite a bit.
And shades of blue generally. You got three bikes with blue.
I mean, I've got a gold one on in the works right now. Another, you know, it's just a big mix.
I learned long ago, for me, it's like, just always order black. Don't do that.
Yeah.
No, but the thing is, it's like 10 years go by and my bikes are always looking good.
Right.
Because they've always just got black on them. Oh. And it's Henry Ford, right?
Yeah.
Oh, look, this is a nice collection of all kinds of fancy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is cool. This is a great little shop here, too.
It is. It really is. Yeah. And, you know, it's going to have a different feel at the other shop.
And look at this. What's this, like, 6-inch tire? What the hell? That thing is a monster.
That's the fat bike I built for myself last fall.
Uh-huh.
So almost a year ago.
Have you ridden it yet?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's just stripped down for parts and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And what are you running here? Just regular...
Yeah,
no
just,
printers, no 3D printers.
Just, yeah, just
vinyl.
Uh
oh.
Hard disk drive.
Dude. Oh, I should have taken a picture of that. So, damn it. I hope you didn't get a hard drive failure.
I'm sure we did.
Well, you probably have a backup system going or anything like that.
We got something. Yeah. Funny enough, though, this machine only runs.
Oh, so it's not heavy.
It's no.
Yeah.
No, we have. I mean, everything is basically on the cloud.
I'm a backup psycho. I'm like, it's like when I was before COVID, when I was in work all the time, I was essentially like syncing every afternoon all my data, so that anything I had at work, I'd have at home, and blah blah blah. But that meant there was a redundant location and blah blah blah. Because, man, I spent a week working. I was working on this GPS dynamometer, so you'd have a GPS logger, like a Garmin type thing. Ride your motorcycle, and based on the topographical information and the accelerations that you calculate over a WGS 84, you know, ellipsoid, and you could But because of that, you could calculate how much thrust was going into the system, therefore the torque, and blah, blah, blah. And I spent like a week and a half on this project, and I had this spreadsheet. It was so sick. And I was like, I'm almost there. I think I almost got it. And I had a hard drive failure, and I lost all that data. And it was, I'm sure you know this, when you have these projects where something like that happens, you never start it over. Mm. You just say, it's dead. Yeah. That's where it stays.
It wasn't meant to be.
It wasn't meant to be. Because you can't bring yourself to just recreate all that work.
Sure.
Because sometimes you do it, but on that project it wasn't.
Yeah.
And that drove me to develop a real system, because data is important.
Yeah. Awesome. I did want to show you real quick, just to help you guys. You'll find it no problem.
Okay.
But,
the rodeo field.
So basically it's super easy, because right now you're right here.
Right.
So if you just take this road.
Go over the bridge.
Yep. Just go down Yampa, take a right on Fifth Street.
Yeah.
So you just go down Yampa.
Yeah.
Right on Fifth. The rodeo grounds are right here. Steamboat Pro Rodeo.
Got it.
You pull in, I bet you'll see a van or two
on the Everybody's
back,
doing it.
In the back.
All right.
It doesn't look like this anymore because they paved it.
Sure.
But when you're looking at it, you're looking south.
It's just a nice spot.
Back here.
Okay.
You'll see.
I'm going to stop this before I ask the next question. There we go. All right. Say goodbye.
Bye.
come on.